And welcome to minute 109 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Joe Amade, the CEO of Virgil Films Entertainment. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Hey, Rob. Good to see you.
Yeah. Minute 109 begins with the men still being in shock. And ends with Henderson explaining the situation. So we ended things yesterday with basically yesterday was the episode where Ryan is told why these guys are there.
Yes, you know, it's funny. You know, one thing that we did not mention or I did not mention about yesterday's minute is the acting and. And if we did mention it, we didn't go to any great lengths about it. But that conversation between Hanks and Damon is, you know, acting is, how many times have we heard actors say acting is all about reacting? It's not about acting. It's about how you react to what the other person's telling you. And there are these significant pauses after every sentence when, from the time, you know, Miller tells Ryan that he's lost his brothers. And each of those pauses represents an emotion. And, you know, one of the emotions is a tear coming out of Ryan's eyes and floating down his cheek. And to play that right, you have to be right timing wise. You have to be right on key. And both of these actors pull this off with the utmost perfection to get the most emotion out of that out of that dialogue. And that should not have gone without saying. So I wanted to make sure that I brought that up and in revisiting that minute again. That series of dialogue blew me away.
Yeah, it really is. Now it's funny that you mentioned that because I have the novelization of this movie, you know, that was written by Max Allen Collins. You know, he did the novelization of the screenplay from Robert Rodat, right? So okay. There's some differences here in the novelization. Again, it could be in a earlier version of the script that they took it from, or it could just be something that the writer Max Collins decided to add on. So I just want to read a few little points here. The scene where Miller is telling Ryan, you know, why they're there. So basically so Henderson starts off by saying, "What brings you to this former town, Captain?" "It's him," Miller says, thumbs indicating Ryan, whose surprise was immediate and wide-eyed. "We came looking for Private Ryan." "Me?" Ryan squinted in amazement. "Why in hell?" Now in the presence of the closest thing to a commanding officer as Ryan had, Miller was ready to get this over with. "James Francis Ryan? Iowa?" "Yes, sir," Ryan says, bewildered, a little worried. "Peyton, Iowa, sir. What's this about?" "There's no easy way to say this, soldier," Miller says. "James, your brothers have all been killed in action." Ryan swallowed. He had the tough veneer any man who'd lived through combat acquires, but his voice sounded frail as he asked, "All of them?" "Not all of them. Must be some mistake." "No mistake, Private. Thomas died on Omaha Beach. Peter on Utah. Daniel died over a week ago in New Guinea. I'm sorry, son." The tough paratrooper who'd been standing before them melted away, and in his place was a kid barely out of his teens, his face, his eyes, flickering with the dire news that the boys he'd grown up with, brothers he'd fought with and laughed with, and sometimes loathed and always loved, were gone. They may have died by bullets or artillery fire or a landmine, but to James Ryan, words had taken them from him, words that seemed unreal, without substance. Yet he knew they were as real as a bullet or artillery fire or a landmine. He knew his brothers were gone. He would never see them again. Not even in a casket. They had vaporized with Captain Miller's word. So I think it's interesting that the way they did it. It's a little wordy.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Doesn't necessarily, it makes sense that it's something that would be cut out, but it tells us a little bit more about the whole thing. You know, the fact that in the novel, in this version, you know, Miller actually tells him what happened to his brothers.
Yeah, I know.
As opposed to just leaving it, wide open, saying your brothers are dead and that's it. But I recall reading at some point that one of the things that Spielberg said about this movie is, and I'm assuming that he's not the only director who thinks this, sometimes less is more. You don't have to necessarily explain everything. You can leave the emotions to do that. And that's why it fits perfectly with what you just were saying about how these two actors are just basically carrying their emotions on their sleeves throughout this entire thing. And it's great.
There's no need. There was no need to describe how each of those brothers were killed.
Right.
No, less is more. Less is more is the rule most of the time, which is why Marvel movies are forgettable, because Marvel believes in more is more. The more you can throw up there, the better it is, as opposed to pulling back. So all those action scenes in those movies just blur together and they all become one film, just with different titles. That's me ranting about Marvel, but what can I say?
It happens to be true for most of the Marvel movies.
Most of them, not all. Yeah, most of them.
Yeah, they have a few that are great.
They do. Yeah. They do. Yeah.
So I can't completely complain about that. Was there anything else that we missed talking about yesterday?
No, it's really all about that dialogue. The ending of the scene that moves into the minute that we're about to discuss is perfect, because again, they're part of that crew, and even though those three characters are on screen for a millimeter of a second, each one of them has its own personality.
Yeah, it's true.
This is great.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, as we said yesterday, we ended things with, Ryan finding out what happened. And then, we have the three amigos from the 101.
That's good.
Basically giving their interpretation of everything that happened. I love how the guy in the middle, he's either eating something or maybe he's chewing tobacco or something like that the whole time. The conversation is a very standard conversation that you would just be having with a buddy, that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's very informal.
Yeah, and that's what makes those. He stands out. Well, he's in the middle, so he's going to stand out anyway. But because of those little actions that he's doing, it really separates him from the other two. And again, you only see the guy for a couple seconds, but he makes his mark.
Yeah, definitely. And then the shot goes back to Ryan talking to Miller, and he goes, you came all the way out here to tell me that?
Yes.
And Miller just looks at him and says, well, you're going home. Our orders are to bring you back. Bring me back. And then Miller says, Corporal Henderson, I don't mean to leave you even more shorthanded, but orders are orders. Any communication about when you're going to be relieved up here? And then Henderson says, well, sir, there's no way to tell. I mean, we have no idea what's happening south of us. He goes, well, I have my orders too, sir. This is the beginning of Ryan's protest. My orders, sir. They don't include me abandoning my post.
Yeah, and from the time Miller says, you're going home, at that moment, you think for a split second, he's going home. This is what, every soldier wants to go home, especially if they've been in any kind of battle whatsoever. You almost know right away that this guy does not want to go home, does not want to, and it only takes less than a minute for him to be vocal about that, to state, I have my own orders, and I'm not leaving this. And it doesn't say abandon my post. And there's the rub. And that rub is going to, that's going to play into the rest of the film.
Correct.
Because they've been, that group of soldiers have been through this journey to find him, and they've lost their friends in doing so. And now the guy doesn't want to go home. I mean,
that's right. We're about to hear his reasoning of why he doesn't want to go home, but it's very interesting, the idea here, because again, the fact that even if Ryan were to say, okay, let's go, we're going back to Normandy, And we're going to get, there's no guarantee that Ryan is going to make it back alive there either.
No, there's none whatsoever. No.
Have to get all the way back. You know, this is a very dangerous journey. It's not, get on the bus and, the bus will take you directly to a plane and you're on your way home. It's an interesting way to think about this movie that, like, you know, the alternate universe version of this movie where they take Ryan back and, you know, what happens to these guys on the way back?
Maybe they live.
That's right. Maybe. Or maybe not. Could be either way.
Yeah. But it's again, it goes back to the writing, and the writing is really good. And again, it doesn't take long for Ryan to, you know, he doesn't even really, it's almost like he's not even going home. It's just so out of the question. And that leaves you with another thought that, all right, you know, my parents, my family has lost three of my brothers, and going home would help them, would be a comfort to them if I made it home, that they're not losing all of their sons. Right. But that's not important. That's not strong enough. What's stronger is me staying with my post.
Right. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned the fact of going back to his folks. I mean, we tried dissecting this when they showed, you know, the scenes with his mother.
Yeah.
And only his mother is ever mentioned. His father is never mentioned. You know, the closest we get to the fact that maybe the father is still alive and around is the fact that the mother is washing two sets of dishes.
Yes, that's true. You're right.
So, I mean, we never see him, and she falls down on her own, you know, when the, you know, minister and an officer come to give her the news that she's lost three sons. You know, there's no mention of Mr. Ryan.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, and again, even in the dialogue, and where I think tomorrow we're going to mention it also about, Mrs. Ryan. They mention her numerous times, but they never mention the father.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. You're right. Huh. I wonder if that's intentional or just, I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I have absolutely no clue if that's no clue whether that's intentional or not, but it's the way it is. That's the way they wrote it. And Miller then tries to convince him a little bit and says, well, I understand that, but you know, this changes things. And he goes, well, I don't see it that way. Now, it's interesting that Ryan is actually fighting with Miller about this. Again, it's, you know, on the one hand, he's talking about the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to abandon his post, but then he also has to listen to orders from his commanding officer.
Hey, he's also, and he's not obeying those. He's about to not obey those. He's about to say, I'm not obeying the orders, which soldiers don't do.
That's right.
In most cases.
Correct.
Yeah. It happens pretty quickly too, but it goes to show that he's resolute in his decision that he's not going home. He's not leaving these guys.
That's right. And then Miller says, well, the chief of staff of the United States Army says that it does.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, he does say that.
And then Henderson, enters the conversation and goes, well, sir, our orders are to hold this bridge at all costs. Now, it's funny that he says it that way, because how does that supersede the order of the chief of staff? You know, the chief of staff says, bring Jimmy Ryan home. And the answer is, well, we're told to hold this at all costs. I have trouble, buying that one, that supersedes that order.
Yes, you are correct. You are correct.
And again, holding it at all costs doesn't mean that you can't have one last man. You know?
Right. No, that's true. That is true.
Right. And then Henderson continues, goes, well, now our planes in the 82nd have taken out every bridge across the Murderit. with the exception of two. One at, and then he gets cut off as he's trying to explain that. But again, I just find it very funny that, you know, he's at this point where Henderson is trying to convince Miller, not too successfully with the way he's talking, you know, that they should be staying here as opposed to going, as opposed to taking Ryan with them. One less guy to defend this particular bridge.
Yeah, I mean, he's already his guys have been depleted. I mean, he's already down a number of guys. He has to defend the bridge. Henderson may be looking at this as, I might now have five more guys or six more guys to help me out, but the worst case scenario is for you to take one more away from me. And I get the orders that you have, but, you know, he's not totally in favor of Ryan going home. That's for sure.
He's not in favor of it, but again, he's got to look at the fact that, this is the orders from the chief. This isn't Miller saying it, which again.
No, it's not Miller. It's the chief of staff. Yeah.
That's right. If Miller was saying it, it also would be valid. I mean, again, Miller does also thank him.
Yeah.
From the perspective, he didn't say the chief of staff ordered us to do this.
Yeah, he does say that. Yeah.
You know, so anything is possible from that perspective.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting. One of the things I love about this movie is it brings up so many different situations where you basically it leaves the viewer contemplating things that you wouldn't normally think of. You know, the fact that they're having us contemplate, you know, whose order supersedes the other and whether it's the right thing to do to disobey an order or not. You know, just by this little conversation of, you know, I don't want to abandon my post.
Well, yeah. And then, again, nothing's been taken into account at this moment of what these guys had to go through to get to this point where they find Ryan. The sacrifices that have been made to get to him. That's coming down the road. I don't want to spoil anything, but... there's that hasn't even been brought into the conversation yet.
It hasn't brought into the conversation, but on the other hand, it shouldn't even be a factor here. Like
an order is an order.
Ours were killed. We know that, and tomorrow we'll talk a little bit about that. But that's not a factor in saying, oh well, you know, two guys died today, therefore you have to come with us.
Yeah, you're right. Yes,
that's the thing. If you could use that as an argument, but I don't think it's a very solid argument by saying, well, you know, these guys died, so you should come with us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I don't have anything else to say about this minute. Do you?
I'm trying to think. No, I think I'm good. I am good.
Okay. All right. So now we will the Thursday segment is a little game that we're going to play. It's called Say What Thursday.
Say What Thursday. I'm scared. I'm nervous now. You got me shaking here.
It's good. It's good when you can get a movie producer to start shaking. There you go. Okay, so this movie, as you and I have discussed over the course of this week, has so many familiar actors before, most of them before they were in their prime. There's countless faces that are recognizable in this movie, you know, either from the past or from the future. So what I decided to do was I was going to make up a little game about different quotes from movies that actors in this movie have played, you know, the parts, the characters that they played in other movies and some of the quotes from those characters. Okay, but again, because there's so many of them, I can't leave it open, open-ended. I need to give you a little bit of a chance to try and figure this out, you know. I can't say that it's going to be every single person here. So I've learned it down to three. Okay, so there are three actors from this movie that I will give you a quote from them, and I will tell you what year the movie came out, and you have to try and guess what movie it is.
Okay.
Okay, so the three actors that I chose for you are Tom Hanks, Dale Dye, and Ed Burns.
Who's the second one?
Dale Dye.
Dale Guy.
Dye. D-Y-E.
Oh, Dale Dye. Okay. All right.
Okay. Dale Dye, he's you know, the military coordinator of yeah. So many movies.
Yeah.
You know, from the 80s up until now. You know, he has a company that you know, that trains actors before they start filming in the use of weapons, and you know, they give them training and drills and all that type of stuff.
Yes.
You know who he is, right?
Yeah, I know who he is.
Okay.
Now right. I do.
Now you do. Okay. All right. So the first one is from a movie that came out in 2019. Okay. Now, again, okay. It's going to either be something that Ed Burns was in, Tom Hanks. It's a quote from either Ed Burns, Tom Hanks, or Dale Dye. Okay. So the quote from 2019 is, "I don't think anybody can grow unless he really is accepted exactly as he is."
I don't care how anybody can grow unless he really...
I don't think anybody can grow.
And the movie came out in 2019? It's not Burns.
No, it is not.
It's not Hanks.
Well, you sure about that?
2019, it's not Die. Is it Hanks?
It is Hanks, yes.
Now I got to go back to 2019, 5 years ago.
I don't think anybody can grow unless he really is accepted exactly as he is. Think about a character that Tom Hanks played that could possibly have said this.
I know, but it's 2019. It's not, Big's a long time ago.
Big's a very long time ago.
a character can grow. Now we're going to waste our time. What is it? What is it?
It's A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a wonderful quote, and I probably should have gotten that. If I cheated and looked at the filmography, I would have gotten it. But yeah, that makes total sense.
So glad that you didn't cheat.
Total sense. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Okay. So the next one. The next one is from a movie from 2006. And the quote is, "Look at me. I'm down here sweating like a pig. And look at you. You're the only woman on the face of the earth that breaks up with her boyfriend and doesn't even shed a tear." I mean, that's got to mean something, right?
It's got to be Eddie Burns.
And it is.
And it's one of his early, early, early films, if not one of his first films.
No, it's 2006. You know, he started in the 90s.
No, God, you know, his films are all... I'm not going to get it. I could sit here and think about all of the titles of his movies and start rambling them off. It's not McMullen's too old.
Why does it have to be one of his movies as opposed to just something that he starred in?
Oh, because most of his movies he's made himself.
That is true. I got to tell you, I recently saw his latest movie, Millers in Marriage, and I loved it.
Did that open here?
Yes, last week.
I do not know the name of this movie.
It's a movie written and directed by Nancy Myers.
Oh, God. God. You know, I will tell you this. Quotes are not my bag. I don't know.
Okay, so the answer is The Holiday.
Yeah, it's not a movie that I would see more than once or even remember.
It wouldn't quit.
Okay. Watch it. I'll get the Dale Dye one.
That's if I even have a Dale Dye one. I don't have to.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
Okay, next one is a movie from 2001. You want to be a real American? Yes, 2001. You want to be a real American? You want to be a tough guy? Here's Eddie's gun. Shoot me.
Is this a movie or is this a show or what?
It's a movie. Only movies.
Anybody else? Who else is in this movie?
De Niro.
2001, De Niro?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
There's a lot of other people in it. Let's see. What can I tell you? It's Kelsey Grammer's in it. Avery Brooks.
There was a movie. That's not even a... No.
Vera Farmiga. It was written and directed by John Hertzfeld.
That's not the movie with... No, Cuba Gooding Jr. That's the other movie. Not Spy Game.
No.
Not...
Well, first try and guess who it is of the three actors that it could be. It could be either Ed Burns, Tom Hanks, or Dale Dye.
Oh, I thought it was Dye. I thought you had one of each.
No.
2001, Robert De Niro, Kelsey Grammer, and Vera Farmiga.
It's not that. I'm going through every De Niro movie. 2001. It's not that. It's going to be the one that I'm not. It's not A Boy's Life. It's not.
No, that's from 93.
Well, it's close to
8 years off.
It's not Bronx Tale.
That was 91.
It's not Stanley and Iris. It's not. Read me the quote again.
The quote once again is: "You want to be a real American? You want to be a tough guy? Here's Eddie's gun. Shoot me! Shoot me!"
Got me. No, go. What is it? No,
it's Ed Burns in 15 Minutes.
Yeah, that's like such a small little forgettable film.
Okay.
I mean, see, that's the problem with quotes. You can pick a quote. I mean, it would be like me. It's almost like me saying, okay, 1998, a war movie, and somebody says, I'm trying to think of one of the lines that we just said to each other. They're so arbitrary, and I'm not good at it. I'm really good at lines from movies like from the 30s and 40s. I'm not good at lines. You know, people recite like lines from Anchorman to me, and I have no idea what they're talking about.
Okay. I wouldn't know that one either from Anchorman.
So now Okay. The whole world can hear that I really don't know a whole lot about movies.
Well, no, you don't know about movie quotes. Yeah, you need to – your job is to know whether it's a movie that's going to make money or not.
But I will tell you a very quick Vera Farmiga story.
Sure.
So Vera Farmiga made a movie called Down to the Bone. And we released that film. No, I'm sorry. She made a movie called Down to the Bone and became, an indie darling. We released the next film called Never Forever, Love Story. And we were doing a commentary with her on the movie. So she came down into the city to New York. And it was me and her and the director of the film, whose name I should remember, but I don't. It's a long time ago.
From Down to the Bone?
No, Never Forever.
Never Forever. Okay, because Down for the Bone is directed by Deborah Granick.
Yeah, yeah, Debbie Granick. And
Never Forever, you said it's called? Never
Forever. Yeah, Never Forever. Anyway, we did this commentary, and she was the nicest woman in the world, but she kept on talking about the fact that she was going to buy two goats. And I couldn't equate an actress. Yes, I couldn't equate an actress buying two goats. But Vera has lived on a farm, her farm, probably a much bigger farm now, outside of New York, forever. And she's a woman of the land. Wonderful human being. Had a really good time doing that commentary, joking with her. And, it was a good time. I have a good memory of her doing that.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Long time ago. So, anyway.
Well, the movie came out in 2007. So we're talking 18 years ago.
Yeah. Gosh. That's a long time ago. Feels like a long time ago.
I understand that. Okay, so the next quote for you is from 1986. Okay.
Okay.
It's a lovely war. Bravo 6 out.
It's a lovely war. Bravo 6 out. 1986. And it's probably Dale Dye.
It was definitely Dale Dye.
Yeah. And it's. Considering I don't know most of the movies he's in.
It's a movie that you've mentioned earlier this week.
I did?
Yes.
Is it a World War II movie?
You thought it was.
it was in my... No, because it was during the favorite war movies section?
Yes.
Oh, God. So it's not Platoon.
It is Platoon. Very good.
That's a good movie.
That's a great movie, and it's a great line. It's right before, it's right when he gives the order to bomb their own position.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah. All right. So, and the final one from 1995, Are the Flowers Blooming in Houston?
Tom Hanks?
It is Tom Hanks. And what movie in 1995?
Apollo 13?
Yes. Very good.
Pretty good. Two out of five.
That's right. He asked Gary Sinise, because they thought that he would have... the measles or the mumps or something.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good movie, too.
Yes, it is. All right, well, thank you. Thank you for being a good sport and playing.
You're welcome very much. Next time, though, I want to pick the quotes and ask you.
I will do just as poorly as you just did. So there you go. I'm willing to admit it. There you go. All right, so Joe, would you like to tell people once again where they can find Joe Amodei?
Yes, sir. Yes, you can find me on my website, virgilfilms.com, or my email is joe@virgilfilmsent.com.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Joe, you want to be a glutton for punishment and come back again tomorrow for one final episode this season?
I think it would be great. I would love to do it.
Excellent. You got it. All right. Excellent. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Tally ho, my friend.
My solitude.